This episode of The Stack was first broadcast on the 16th of May 2015 on Monocle 24.
Vienna's bearded queen welcomes international visitors and takes part in a beautiful photo shoot while she's at it. And we hear from Massachusetts, New Zealand, and Ethiopia in pursuit of those for whom running is their passion. A marathon of new print today on The Stack. On today's edition of The Stack, we'll be welcoming a British style magazine editor with a passion for cities and hearing from the editor of a new magazine that aims to celebrate the culture of running.
Print has a history of being well-curated, high-quality editorial, and I think in this culture of information overload, it's even more important to surface quality stories and provide a unique editorial voice in the sport we love.
Plus, we go to Vienna to flick through the pages of a magazine dedicated to welcoming visitors to the Eurovision Song Contest. And last year's winner, Conchita, is, of course, the cover girl. All that coming up on this edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulight. Now, in just 1 week from now, Austria's beautiful capital will be hosting the continent's most iconic music event, the Eurovision Song Contest. To ensure that the many thousands of visitors, from media teams to participants to diehard fans, get a real flavor for Vienna, Eurovision, together with the city of Vienna, recruited local firm Brand Unit to produce the rather lovely 12 Points, or 12 Points, magazine. The title's creator, Ulrike Schabitzer-Handler, wanted to infuse the magazine with what she calls a rather rude Viennese sense of humor. Austrian writer and satirist Christian Qualtinger was employed to devise 12 wry and witty chapter headings, and Austria's cause celeb and 2014 Eurovision winner Conchita Wurst features heavily. Well, to tell us more, we welcome Ulrike on the line from Vienna. Hello, Ulrike.
Hello.
Ulrike, I wanted to start. I was in Vienna just a little over a week ago. I was in the wonderful store Super Sense, which of course celebrates everything really analog related. And I was just poking around and looking at things. And there I was about to pick it up, and then I wasn't going to pick it up because I'd already bought lots of magazines. But I saw this beautiful yellow cover for 12 Points magazine. And at first it didn't really hit because I didn't even notice the Eurovision logo on the front cover, but I just picked it up and actually dumped it in the bottom of my tote bag. And it wasn't until probably about 48 hours later, I was in Innsbruck, that I had time to pick up the title. And I have to say, and it's the reason why we're leading the show with it today, it's because I just thought it was brilliant. I'd never seen something capture Vienna so well, particularly in a free format as well. And when I say free format, that's not because it's inexpensive, but oftentimes you see things which are put out by various consortiums, and they tend to be a little bit vanilla, and they tend to be a little bit bland. But you've managed to really do exactly what you've promised, I guess, in many ways, and put out a very cheeky, interesting, and arresting title. First question, were you at liberty to really deliver and come good on what you wanted to do? Because I think for probably many agencies, it would be very difficult to get across the tone and message.
No, we had been totally free in producing the content and doing the design for the magazine. For us, it was more the challenge bringing the heterogeneity of the city content-wise and design-wise in the magazine, because there's still a big gap in between the traditional and the innovative Vienna. And we had the feeling when we produced the magazine that the magazine closed this gap in between the traditional and innovative Vienna.
Was there a deliberate move, or has it happened organically, that this has become Vienna's Eurovision and not Austria's Eurovision? A lot of us have been talking about this, that oftentimes we've really talked about national because it is a national event. And so we've heard about, yes, Sweden is going to be hosting, or it's going to be Denmark hosting. And it really seems that Vienna has taken this over. And even though you have the Austrian flag in the logo, I'm wondering if this is somehow a bit of an urban land grab.
I think it's really a Viennese event, because there was a big discussion going on before the song contest, because different Bundesländer wanted to be the official host of the song contest. And there was this funny sentence from the head of Vienna. He said, "Can you imagine if they say Gramat Neusiedl is calling London?" And so it's a little city in Austria, Gramat Neusiedl. And so he said, it's important that Vienna is calling London.
Mm.
And so it became really this Viennese event. And so we decided doing Viennese magazine for the ESP.
I'm glad you said it, because I'm sure people in Innsbruck or Linz or Graz wouldn't mind, though, that if they said Graz was calling London. But that's your political problem, not mine. Just before we go, do you think that this is something which could endure? Do you think the city of Vienna, for example, will see the value in this? Because it really struck me that, yeah, when I go back to Vienna, maybe in 18 months' time, I want the updated version of 12 points or whatever it might be called. Do you think there's going to be a life after Eurovision for the title?
Yes, we really would like to come up with a new issue of 12 Points magazine. And we just discussed also the digital strategy for the 12 Points magazine. So hopefully next time, if you come to Vienna, you find a new issue of 12 Points magazine.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Best of luck, a week from now. I imagine the city's going to be going quite crazy. That was the creator of 12 Points, 12 Points magazine, the Eurovision magazine, as engineered by Ulrike Schabitzer-Handler, on the phone there from Vienna. We're going to go for a little short break, and maybe in a break with tradition, we should hear from last year's Eurovision Song Contest. Of course, the winner here is Conchita Wurst.
From the fading light of life.
Slightly more dramatic interlude there. That was Conchita Wurst, the 2014 Eurovision Song Contest winner. We'll see who takes the crown and the prize for whatever nation a week from now. Of course, that'll be broadcast on many networks around the world. Also, Australia invited in for the very first time. Anyway, you're listening to This Tack with me, Tyler Brulé. Time to meet our guest today. Of course, breaking a little bit with tradition. Normally, that starts at the top of the show. Anyway, Anthony Teasdale was a longtime contributing editor of Arena, and most recently was production editor at Esquire Weekly. He now busies himself with a varied portfolio of branding work and has now just published the 12th edition of his Style and Design Focus magazine umbrella, which I was going to say he's clutching it in his hands. He's not. It's not far away. It's just beyond the water pitcher. Andy, before we start, we'll talk about umbrella, but just you've got a copy of 12 Points in front of you as well. I just wanted your reaction to it, because the reason why we kicked off the show with it, I was just really impressed that you could see that a city would be, you know, so on the edge to do something. And I've really sort of judged on the restaurants, the bars, all of the recommendations that have gone into it, and also the production values too.
I think it's a really beautiful thing. And when you're trying to sell your city as a place that is somewhere people want to go to, this is an excellent piece of branding. It's really useful, but it also has other messages in there that if you are the sort of person who wants to seek out interesting things, then this magazine does that and says that, yeah, this is a place where open-minded, quite well-off people can go and have fun. It's absolutely ideal.
Mm.
And I think it shows to me that the people in Vienna obviously know what they're doing, unlike some of the cities I've dealt with who maybe don't so much.
Right. And there you're talking about just understanding and recognizing the power of brand and how much you have to service your audience. And this audience, of course, being the punters who are going to come at the weekend and spend money.
Yeah. If they're coming there, I mean, there's a chance that they may buy a city guide or they may go on TripAdvisor. But what this does, this gives you the inside guide to the city. I think what you really want when you go to a town is that you want that virtual insider. Mm. You're going to avoid the rubbish places. This says, this is the bar to go to. This is the little street to go to. This is where you're going to get your great shops.
Mm. I was I was actually at the headquarters for Vienna's city tourism and branding team. And again, I'm actually not surprised they put this out, because you go into these offices and they were so slick. Not so slick in a way that you'd think, okay, people are having a laugh and they're running away with the public purse, but just all of the details were right and just so well executed. And I think we probably visited and dealt with lots of other city authorities all over the world. And sometimes just even walking into space, you think, is this how you're trying to attract new airlines to fly to your city? How you're trying to attract new developers? Because this is an absolute dump. And I have to say, I mean, Vienna was, you'd want to sort of, you'd think, well, at least maybe I'm not going to part cash with the city in a huge way, but I absolutely respect what they're doing. And I think it's amazing some cities how the wheels fall off.
Yeah, some people, I mean, have been in council jobs far too long.
Mm. Now, cities and the intersection of all of the things that happen in them, and you know, be that sort of media and culture and design and the built environment, is a big part of what is delivered in Umbrella. For people who aren't familiar with the magazine and our listeners all over the world, where do you sit? And I guess, and the starting point for the magazine, and I think it's always good to maybe sort of illustrate, when you think about where Umbrella sits in any story, who are your best neighbors in terms of other titles? Who do you want to see on the left and who do you want to see on the right and who should be above and below you?
Okay, well, we would want Monocle as a very friendly nearby neighbor because we're fans of Monocle. It was influential on Umbrella. We also like Esquire, which I've actually brought with us today. But I also like The Economist, and I like some of the regional magazines and some fanzines. And it's taken the best bits of both. What Umbrella really is about is it's about an absolute devotion to the city. I, as you can tell by my accent, perhaps I come from Merseyside. And, you know, growing up, the city was everything to me. I love what cities offer. And I just want to celebrate them. Me and my partner, Matt, who I do the magazine with, we are huge fans of London, but also huge fans of other British cities and cities all over the world. One of the things that maybe drives us mad a bit, especially when we worked at other mags, was that there were great things going on, say, in Glasgow or Liverpool or Manchester, but the London-based press never left any further north than Euston. We wanted to bring that together for one magazine. Mm.
And how do you square that? Because, you know, when you look through, you do the regions and the other metropolitan centres in this country very well, but you also talked about the rest of the world. And where do you sort of look at that tension and where do you draw the borders between saying, look, I really want to, tell the story about the redevelopment of a neighbourhood in Liverpool, for example. And does that come first maybe at the expense of doing other places just because you feel that's almost a bit of a political mission for you?
I think there is an element of that. I'm very proud of my city and my region of the Northwest, which I think it's a great gravitational pull away from London. I think it's the most creative part of the country. But, you know, I live here. I like talking about these places that other people don't know about. But, of course, we are international outlook. And also, we're run on a small budget. So we look, you know, extremely luxurious. We spend a lot of money on paper stock. We can't afford journalists all over the world. Maybe people come to us and we just do as much as we can. But we're hugely international. You know, I'm as interested in the metro in Toronto as I am in the latest boutique shop opening in Glasgow. They can all work. And I think our readers are internationalist in look.
Mm. Now, I think we've given everyone a good umbrella overview of what your title is doing. You mentioned you've got Esquire here. We're going to go to a break in a short while, but maybe just so we can get sort of stuck into maybe one title that you want to start. You don't have to start with Esquire. You can, whatever's in the pile there. What have you brought today?
Well, okay. So I've bought a magazine that's maybe a little bit similar to Umbrella called Mundial, which is, it's a football magazine. It's not football so much about the game itself. It's about the culture that surrounds the game, which is perhaps more interesting than the game. And I think if you spent any time in the north of England, you understand that there is very interesting culture around that. And it's brilliant for men and women who love clothes, legends of the game, sports stadia.
You just pass it across just as you talk about and celebrate all that's on offer. And it's because just one thing that strikes me immediately, a lot of people know and like, let's say, Green Soccer Journal. How does this position itself differently? Is it a competitor and rival for those who haven't seen Mundial yet? Or is it departing and going in a different place?
I would say it's slightly different. I would say that the people who read Mundial are match-going football supporters who are very much interested in clothing. They would have been called casuals and maybe still are, you know. And I think you have that obsession from the late 70s and early 80s in England with sportswear, great clothing worn by chaps at football matches, and it's for them, and they are in love with the iconography of football. So it is for real fans, but real fans who are style obsessed.
I mean, it's interesting how you've had a brand like Steeple Pine, and they're shopping clothing for the discerning gent. But, you know, again, looking at sort of, you know, brands like Superga, Nicholas Deakins, K-Way, which of course is, you know, really having a bit of a revival on terraces as well. And then an outside back cover, you've got Adidas promoting their Adria SPZL.
It's the special range. So
yes,
that's done by a guy called Gary Aspen, who's from Blackburn in Lancashire.
Oh, okay. Another northern plug.
Yeah. And Gary, like a lot of us in the north, was obsessed by with Adidas in the 70s and 80s. And he's taken those style cues and done a new collection based around that. I mean, it all looks like it was made in Dusseldorf in 1976. So it's the craft work of shoes.
Well, you've given us also a very, very good segue, because in a moment we're going to be looking at a new running title, which has just hit our desks from Boston. We're going to talk about Meter Magazine on The Stack here on Monocle 24. Stay with us.
Monocle's unrivaled network of editors and correspondents around the world bring you a brilliant new collection of books, The Monocle Travel Guides. Speaking in an informed but informal way about everything from architecture to art, late night bars to early morning markets, The Monocle Travel Guides mix the classic with the contemporary, going beyond the conventional and revealing the hidden spots that cities have to offer. Published by Gestalten, these travel guides are for people who want to get the most out of their stay, however short, and feel like locals rather than tourists in the world's great cities. These series kicks off with London and New York, available now in Monocle shops, at monocle.com, and in all good bookstores. And watch out for Hong Kong and Tokyo on the way soon. The Monocle Travel Guides. Cities are fun. Let's explore.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, and my guest today, Anthony Teasdale of Umbrella Magazine. Now, we all know how popular running has become. The sweaty, well-sneakered jogger has become a mainstay of every city from Chicago to Shanghai. But little is told of running history and culture, as well as running as a profession. Boston-based running apparel brand Tracksmith has now just launched Meter Magazine, an eloquent, almost poetic look at the world of running. A little earlier, we spoke to Meter's editor, Matt Taylor. He's going the distance.
He's going for speed. Over the past two or three decades, the running industry has been quite successful selling the sport as a participatory activity, you know, with the biggest marathons now drawing as many as 50,000 entrants. You just had the London Marathon a few weeks ago. It's become a massive participatory event. But with this sort of everyone gets a medal mentality comes a diminished reverence for competition and for tradition and for the amateur spirit on which the sport was founded. And so Meter is a magazine that really basks in the history of running, and it celebrates the competition at the heart of the sport, and it reflects the various communities that running fosters. The photography really captures the grace and the intensity and the beauty of running, and the stories really pay respect to, you know, the incredible history and heritage that the sport has. And these are stories that haven't been told in this type of format for many decades. And sort of selfishly as well, I've always wanted to publish a running magazine. I wrote a business plan for one while I was in college 15 years ago, and it never got beyond the idea. So I sort of joke that I had to start a running brand to launch a running magazine. But here we are with issue one, and I'm very happy about it. I think print has a history of being well-curated, high-quality editorial. And I think in this culture of information overload, it's even more important to surface quality stories and provide a unique editorial voice in the sport we love. I think it's one of those cases where, yes, we have a brand that is Tracksmith and we're primarily selling apparel, but we're huge fans of the sport. We love the sport. It's a passion that all of us that work here share, and what we wanted didn't exist, so we just thought we would create it ourselves. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. So the cover of this issue, that photo comes from one of our featured stories. It's actually on British fell running. We sent a writer and a photographer to this fell race up in Wales, and that photograph was shot by actually a London-based sports photographer named Harry Engels. And then, obviously, Meter, that's the typography there is Miller, which is a Scotch-Roman typeface. I think it was designed by Matthew Carter. So, you know, we just wanted very strong photography to sort of carry the magazine. And throughout the magazine, we rely heavily on photography. We just feel it's visually quite unique, and photography within running doesn't really exist in this sort of editorial style. So it's something that for us was a natural way to think about the photography and how that could sort of in itself create the design of the magazine.
Excuse me, we're looking for the Robertson brothers. We hear their mom lives maybe here, but do you know about them?
Do they come from Ecuador or somewhere?
One of my favorite stories in this issue of Meter is about the Robertson twins, twins from New Zealand, who they left their home at a very young age, 16, 17 years old, and went and lived in Iten, Kenya, which is a very small village about 6 hours from Nairobi. It's sort of the epicenter of the East African distance dominance. It's an incredible town. I've been there myself, and you know, you wake up in the morning and there's literally hundreds of people out running because it's sort of the place you go to try to make it. You know, as you know, Kenya, the sport of choice is distance running. And so they said, well, we want to be the best, and so we're going to go live and train with the top Kenyan athletes. And now one of them lives in Ethiopia, actually. They've been there for 6-7 years now.
Well, my name is Zane Robertson. I live currently in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. I spend time with my brother in Kenya at training camps, and I've basically been living in Africa for the last 8-9 years. A lot of people didn't want us to go, and in the end, our mother and father were the only ones who said, okay, yeah, you guys can go, you're going to do it anyway, so we better support you in doing this.
We sent a writer and a little crew to go to New Zealand because they were actually coming home for a short trip in between the seasons. They had some media planned, and you know, it was just sort of a whirlwind, and our crew couldn't find them. They didn't show up when they were supposed to for the meeting because they'd just become sort of these very sort of maverick characters within the sport, and back home, when they are home, it's really crazy and hectic for them.
Even after 2 or 3 years, they were questioning, like, comparing us to what Rupp's running in America, or the Kiwis that went to America for the scholarships. They're running faster times than these guys, and where are the Robertsons? You know, what are they doing?
They're just fascinating individuals and quite brash, but also have finally found great success. One of the brothers recently ran the half marathon and under an hour, 59 minutes in change. He's the third fastest non-African ever at the half marathon distance. So all of these years sort of, you know, living in that culture and taking on the lifestyle of the Kenyan distance runners has paid off for them.
I mean, training's no secret. In the end, it's all hard work. It's all mind over matter, really. I think a lot of people give up too soon.
Before that was Matt Taylor, editor of the new running magazine Meter, but he's also the founder of the rather outstanding running brand, apparel brand, Tracksmith. And you can read more about the Tracksmith brand in the June issue of Monocle, appropriately titled Transport Issue. I'm here with Anthony at Teasdale. You've been looking through Meter as well. Just thoughts and reflections on this rather, I think, a rather handsome new title for the newsstand.
It's lovely. I want to carry it around me and show it off in the street. I think like Mundial, it's one of those mags that starts from a passion for a certain topic and then a realisation that there isn't anything catering for it. And therefore you think, let's do it ourselves, like Cliff Richard in The Young Ones.
And I think it's really incredible because if you look at their clothing brand, they've just come in and they've just filled a gap in the market, I think doing a number of things, which I think so many of us who, you know, when you like sport or you like a brand, you somehow sort of, you know, come across a wonderful garment and they talk about all these great stories and sustainability, but you know, you see that it's probably made in a not very pleasant factory, you know, somewhere in Asia. And I think with what Matt has done, which is I think also it's reflected in the magazine, is that, you know, all of the garments, it might be sort of the best Japanese fabric or something great from Switzerland, but it's also largely made in the States as well, and you know, in still great old factories in Massachusetts. So you really sort of see this, I think, passion sort of underlined.
I really like that, the fact that they've used really good paper, that they've really thought about the typeface. Mm. That goes, therefore, into their clothing brand. That philosophy infects everything they do. And I think that should be a lesson for all of us who work in magazines and media or branding, is that it's worth spending that little bit extra for something special.
Yeah, and because that customer who you think about in your mind, they get it. I mean, yeah. they're going to spend the extra, whether it's the extra £10 it costs, extra £5 on that fabric. I think as long as it's delivered, I think with integrity, people will spend the money. Let's go to what else you've got over there. I can see Esquire peeking out. Maybe you mentioned that. Why don't we start with Esquire? Maybe we can get to your last title as well.
Okay, so Esquire has been redesigned. And Esquire UK is, I would say, slightly different to Esquire USA. I think Esquire UK is a really great mag. I had worked there last year on its iPad app, which in the end they had to fold due to people not perhaps wanting to spend as much money as they wanted on their digital.
No, and we should probably just maybe make a point about that for a moment as well. They're not alone. I mean, this is a very interesting story when you talk to publishers, whether they're here or in Munich, as much as people talk about, yes, we're launching a tablet edition. There's a bigger story, which is just the amount of people who have just quietly just gone out of the business.
I do not think that unless you're something like The Times or The Economist, that you can run a tablet magazine and make a profit.
Especially for a monthly.
No, and you're not getting that full, you know, when I open this beautifully new redesigned Esquire, and it does look absolutely fantastic. I'm really impressed. I smell the paper. It feels great. The ads look great. I'm already part of that Esquire lifestyle. I'm part of that. The iPad version can't really do that. And I think a very, very strong point now is that people, I don't think, want to pay for digital. I think if it's digital, it has to be free.
Now, just in the interest of time, the redesign, I think it's very interesting when you look what they've done. I think Esquire has underlined a commitment to the newsstand just by virtue of how the masthead of the magazine looks. You have this very nice poppy orangey red as this very, very prominent strap. And I'm going to be interested to see how that evolves, whether they're going to stick to that and just look for that punch of color. But you really see that there's something in this redesign, though, which says, we want to be present. We want you to notice us at Heathrow, at Berlin Airport, wherever you might pick up this magazine. It's not sort of shying away from the newsstand fight.
No, it's, and I think what I love about Esquire is that on the surface, you might think it's very similar to GQ, but Esquire has a slight cheekiness to it. It's slightly the naughty boy in the high-end men's lifestyle classroom. They've got a great cover line which says, you know, new look, new sections, new writers with an asterisk. And then at the bottom of the page, it says, same old losers in charge, more's the pity. Mm. And I like that slight cheekiness. And I'd think, right, that's the mag for me because I know that's going to appeal to my sort of sense of humour. And yet it doesn't compromise on its luxury. You've got beautiful Patek Philippe adverts on the back. It's great. It's really bold. And I think they've done a great job.
Lots for everyone's reading weekend. We've heard about Mundial today. We heard about 12 Points. Of course, Umbrella Magazine, Meter there as well. And certainly a tarted up British edition of Esquire. Anthony Teasdale, very good to talk to you.
Thank you indeed, sir.
And the magazine is current edition of Umbrella's out at all relevant newsstands.
At all relevant newsstands. And it's also available from steeplepine.co.uk. For £6.
Excellent. And that brings us to the end of this 142nd edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé. Our producer today was David Pleasant, and Claire Urban has been managing the controls very ably. If you have any comments or queries, do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back next Saturday at the very same time. Of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, goodbye.